Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, loads to discuss. Get your text into 53106 or at Off the Ball on Twitter. There's an early text in saying, lads, I'm not sure if anyone heard the Gardaí are investigating Munster for making an unnecessary journey to the RDS at the weekend. Boom, boom. Ron Nagara, hello.
Hiya, Joe. How are you? that's a new law.
It was an unnecessary trip. I mean, they should have known.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can't, sorry, it lasted for 5 seconds. I got the joke, but then there was a breakup. Usually it's very good. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, yeah, loud and clear. Shout if you're losing me. You've got me now.
Great.
It's a very 2021 Zoom conversation. So how is the Emilio Estevez of La Rochelle? Your Breakfast Club performance, I thought, was both touching and powerful.
Yeah, you enjoyed it. My knowledge of movies is poor. It's poor, but I've had a few breakfasts with Johnny, but none of them were like that.
No, there was an intensity about that one.
Yeah, there's an intensity with a lot in regard to Johnny because he's a competitor, but underneath it, there's a great personality there that I think a lot of people have seen, but more people need to see it, but I think... there's a very caring person behind the, I suppose, the steely demeanour, and I enjoyed my 2 years in Paris with him hugely. It was good. It was good fun, even though it was a really difficult probably period in his rugby career, but I think it gave him, I suppose, huge sustenance for the future.
Yeah, for sure. Well, look, I don't really know what I want you to say about that video. I just wanted to mention it to you anyway, so we can move off it quickly enough.
Yeah, it was. It's crazy what people can do nowadays, isn't it? If you don't find that funny, there's something wrong with you, you know?
I think you came out of it better than Johnny, but we'll move on.
A little bit weird.
I'm still not sure what to make of it. Yeah. Can I throw something a bit left field at you? We had Liam Griffin on the show on Sunday, the Wexford hurling manager back in 96. I don't know
yes,
if you remember that.
I do, of course. Yeah, I've met Liam a few times.
Yeah, he's a brilliant man. And we had a great chat. And in the midst of it, he just made an interesting point where ahead of the All-Ireland final, his aim or his mantra was, I am going to be the calmest person in Croke Park. I'm going to stay calm all the way through, no matter what. And, you know, some of the way he would do this, he'd go through every scenario. You know, if so-and-so gets injured, I'm going to make this change. If he gets injured, I'll make that change. If this happens in the game, I'll do that. He visualised everything. And his aim was to be super calm on All-Ireland final day. And he achieved it. And it was quite an interesting point he made. So I just, you know, you're a younger manager making your way in the game. That side of the game, managing during the 80 minutes, as opposed to all the other stuff, but during the 80 minutes... Are you getting good at that, do you feel? Have you found an approach that suits you? Do you take on loads of information and stats, or do you just trust your eye? Or, you know, there's so many ways you could approach it, get fired up, all that stuff.
And I don't have a set routine as of now, because I still think that it depending on what role, I suppose, you have in the team, are you the ultimate decision maker, or do you feed into the decisions? You know, because when I was an assistant coach at Racing, for example, I experienced a red card for our team after 23 minutes, which was a number 9, and Max Mashino got sent off. So I just threw the book on the ground in frustration and kind of just literally threw my two legs up on the seat in front of me and just sat back for a little bit and kind of, that's that game gone, you know. And then something inside you just says, okay, just sit tight here a second, because all logic and all statistics and all data would point that you have to replace your number 9. But something kind of hit me to say maybe we don't need to put in a 9, because we've won him off, who was an Argentinian sevens player who had experience, was on the wing. So you can kind of I mean, obviously for their feed into the scrum, the winger can defend on his wing. We just don't have a nine putting pressure on their nine, but that's not the end of the world. But when we have the ball, it has a massive, I suppose, onus on how you want to play the game. But it was terrible in one regard, because you had a young scrum half in the new camp who was only busting to get onto the pitch, and he's stripped and he's ready to go, and you're kind of there to your staff on the sideline going, hold it, we won't make any change. And he's looking at you in disbelief. I suppose other members of the staff are looking, what are you doing? It was a great learning, I suppose, experience for me in that regard, that something that you probably, you obviously visualise reds and yellow cards, but you don't know what numbers they're going to be. But that was something that was that stood out early in my career, that kind of said that it's never over till it's over, and it's never dead till it's dead, and it's never won till it's won, obviously, as well. And the same would be in relation to, I think, especially in the top 14, Joe, like it's called coaching, so you have 14 opportunities to make changes, which is huge. But, you can bring a guy off, you can bring the other guy back on, but then the guy that you've taken off can't come back on unless there's an injury. But then there's, I suppose, asterisks around front rows, and asterisks around concussion, and there's asterisks around... I suppose, head knocks and blood. But it's something that is more so, even as every year goes by in rugby, it is a 23-man game. It's very different, I suppose, to my time, I would think. And when you probably started with your best team, you look at Eddie Jones now and he's looking to finish with his best team. And there's a lot of logic to doing it whatever way you think suits your team best. But yeah, you have to be... So stats and data are very, very important, but I think it's the story behind that data too that is even more interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure. So say first 5-10 minutes of a game, the players are trying to feel their way into the game. You as a coach, you must be trying to get a feel for the game as well. What are you looking out for in the first 5-10 minutes of a match?
I suppose kick space initially. Is it the kick space I've seen that we've previewed, or are they changing their backfield? That's something that can be very obvious early in the game. I suppose the second thing will be line speed. And then you're probably, from an attack point of view, you probably have practiced to play a lot during the week that you want a settler, or that you want to settle into the game with, that gives a lot of people a chance to handle the ball, so they feel, okay, I'm in now. It's not my confidence is up, but I've got a touch. And usually when people get a touch, their nerves go. It is so different now with empty stadia, where, I wish I was like Liam Griffin, because I think when there is a crowd there, you can't. What you're saying and roaring is absolutely useless. But... referees are human, touch judges are human. If you give an old roar here and there from the coaching box, it may not be recognised, but I think sometimes you plant the seed.
Yeah. And can you get information down to the team? So say straight away, it's really fascinating for us to get a feel for what you're looking at for in the first few minutes. So their shape in the back three and how that affects your kicking, or their line speed, for instance. If say what they're doing is different to what you had rehearsed or planned for a little bit during the week, can you get messages down to the team, or are they kind of on their own in many ways?
No, you can. You've kind of two runners, really. You have a kind of strength and conditioning coach who runs water, or, gels or jellies for energy later in the game for the players. And you have two guys kind of on mic, so I'd have a direct line to John O'Gibbs, who'll be down on the sideline, or else you can have a direct line to one of the doc or the physio. But Joe, I think there is a lot of work in it too, but you've got to understand, and I think that's sometimes the benefit. There's many a disadvantage of a player becoming a coach, but one of the good advantages of of being a player and experience, there's very, very little you can take in. And when a team squares up against each other, you have to have one killer point, because if you keep feeding in, I suppose, information that's good, but it's not great, and that becomes consistent and week in, week out, I think the receiving, zones and the players' heads may not be where you require them to be. While if you're, quiet for seven games and then you come in with something, I think you have a far greater chance of getting a kickback from your players. But it's also to say too that if you have a lot of information to go onto the pitch, you haven't got your plan right.
Yes. No, that all makes sense.
And they can do stuff differently, but you know, it's not rocket science either, the game of rugby. You know what I mean? You're probably looking to identify, is the space in the air, is the space through them, or is the space around them?
Yes. If you're looking at a player X out there, one of your players, and you're like, I don't feel like this lad's having a good game, my eyes tell me he's not having a good game, would you use stats then? Would you ask someone over your shoulder, come here, tell me what he's doing out there?
Not really, no. I think that becomes interesting potentially at test level or very elite level, when if you were looking at meters per second in terms of how well they're getting along, their repeat speed efforts, their speed endurance, their speed on kick chase, their speed on kick retreat, their work off the ball. What's that looking? If there's a guy flagging to your eyes, you can get it verified by the data staff. But with that too, you got to know your player in terms of, you know what I mean, a certain guy's heart rate may not be, you know what I mean, reaching 220 and he's working off, you know what I mean, 190, and all of a sudden he could be up at 190. You're like, oh, he's in the red for a long time, we got to flag him. Mm. Or another guy has a different pain threshold. So it's really about knowing your subject and knowing your players to see, do they look distressed to you, or is the data very, very interesting that you're prepared to make a change? Because the good thing, I suppose, about building a squad too is the fact that if you genuinely build a squad where you can put guys in, and it's the jersey that performs as opposed to the player that performs, if you get me. So irrespective of if it's your first or second number 12 playing the game this week, we expect the same standard. I think that's when you know you've got a good environment going on. And but there are other times when you have to be absolutely ruthless in terms of, for example, on probably two images, that it's not this guy. He probably doesn't get it.
Yes.
And I did that this season for we got a great young right winger, Spaniard, and what I ask of the wingers is probably I ask an awful lot of them, but in this game it just was his processing of information was a little bit off, and it affected his probably decision making, and in terms of a top class game, it was getting a little bit ugly. So I said, what's the lesser of two evils? Yes. Whip him off now or make him suffer. So you're in a lose-lose situation. But players, in fairness to them, when you explain it to them, your why and what you're looking for, but you replay them again quickly. And thankfully I did that. And then the second game back, you got a try. I think that's where you know you can do that, as opposed to absolutely killing a young kid's confidence.
Yes. How early was that in the match? 5 minutes.
No. So starting, but I think 27.
Okay,
that like would never.
No, you don't want to get it at 27. Would that be about the earliest you've hooked someone off?
By a long way.
Okay,
it's not funny.
No, it's horrible, and like it's the walk of shame, the walk of shame off after 27.
Yeah, exactly. It's crushing.
Mm.
And but I think if you tell him that, then he appreciates that you're feeling for him, and
yeah,
you care about them and you don't ever want them to experience this again. But it's the same thing, I suppose, for me with the Northampton game in 2000 with Woody, you know, the advice, if you don't address the issue you have, it'll come back and bite you again. So you got to address it.
So if we were to, and this is a kind of a weird enough question, if we were to put a percentage then on the importance of your performance in those 80 minutes out of the whole week in terms of getting a good result, how big a percentage is your performance in those 80 minutes, would you say, of the whole week, all the preparation, all the culture stuff, everything else?
Repeat that question, Joe, sorry.
Like, I sort of mean,
from my point of view.
Yeah, like, so you being very good in those 80 minutes and making the right decisions, does that, you know, is that like 5% of the overall effort, or is it bigger than that? I guess how important do you think it is, is what I'm kind of asking.
No, I think the bulk of my work is Monday to Thursday. I'm probably then on my own on the Sunday in when I review.
Yeah, okay.
Because that's absolutely crucial. But what is pleasing now is that when you get transfer and from your guys at training ground to the pitch, that fuels you to probably not work harder, but gives you a huge appetite to keep investing, encouraging the people that you're working with and the players that you're coaching, because it's very pleasing when you work on something Monday to Friday and it comes off at the weekend. And that can't happen every week, but when that does happen, it gives you a lot of satisfaction. And the flip side of that is that when you work on something all week and it doesn't work in training, how do you expect it to work in a game?
Yeah, sure.
And that was last year,
right,
at times.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? I find there are very few hard luck stories.
Mm. So those 80 minutes, really, there's only so much you can do, really. It's the other body of work across the rest of the week. You can't magic something up.
No, but
minutes.
I think... Well, I think for me, that's an ongoing process, Joe, and the fact that how often are you making them aware of are they scanning for space in attack, and then our key principles without the ball, how often are we referring to that throughout the week, that it becomes absolutely autopilot. They're very, very different subjects for me, though, the attack and with the ball or without the ball, because with the ball, it's very much decision-making, but when you're defending, you have one cue and that's the ball, but you've got to connect with everyone inside you and outside you, and you can only control your space. But like when you're attacking, usually the guy with the ball has to concentrate on the ball, and he's so dependent on what people around him see and communicate to him to make him look good.
Let me ask you this then. Have La Rochelle ever lost a game because of your performance in the coach's box or a decision you made in those 80 minutes?
Well, I'm sure they have. I can't name one straight off. I think it's very important that there's a group discussion on anticipating changes and anticipating impact players. I think that's very interesting among a staff to do that. But then you have to have a few plans, Joe, because as you know, with contact and the collisions,
yes,
you may have used two subs within 20 minutes. So you have to have plan A, B and C. But I think you wouldn't want to be thinking for the first time live in the box what my potential combination may be if my second row was to go down.
Right.
So you have to, mentally kind of map that out for yourself.
Mm. No, it's all very interesting. I guess I'm going to be sitting at home on Friday and I'll be watching La Rochelle against Gloucester. And when the camera pans to you in the coach's box, I just want to have a sense of what's going on in that head of yours. That's why I took you down this route this evening.
It's very different. It's interesting. I'll be excited. I'll be a little bit on the edge of my seat in terms of, obviously it means so much, but at the same time, there will be, I suppose, a fair amount of a composure inside me, knowing that we've prepared well, and you can't influence that much. You know, the days of losing the plot and kicking down the coaching box, it shouldn't happen, I hope. So, no, I think my mindset has very changed, you know, since my spell in the Crusaders. So I see things with an awful lot of optimism now.
The general form for people, obviously, maybe have been Six Nations focused and not following the rugby elsewhere. La Rochelle are second in the top 14, 3 points behind Toulouse. You've won 14 of 20 games. There was an away win at Bordeaux at the weekend just gone, which I'm sure was very good. So Gloucester, this competition is very much in your DNA and your makeup, and I know that. I'll probably phrase this wrongly, so take me in the best possible way. Have you the resources to fight on two fronts? Like this Champions Cup match, is this every bit as important to you, if not more so, than doing well in the top 14? Or do you have to prioritise one over the other? Where are you on that?
No, that's a great question, because I had that thought in my head at the end of training today when I left the circle, because there isn't much history, obviously, in Stade Rochelais with the Champions Cup. They've played a quarter final, I think, in the Challenge Cup. Very different competitions, as we know. But this is where we want to be, and we're very excited about what do you call it? 1/8 of a final, Huitium finale, I've been saying all week. So we know it's kill or be killed on Friday night. So that's very exciting. Can we fight in two fronts? Yes, we can, most definitely. And we've every intention of doing that. There's massive history, as you know, on the Buccleuch and the prestige of winning the top 14. But I think if you ask any managers or coaches about this weekend and what's ahead, it's just like such a souped up Champions Cup that everyone is going to be going gung-ho for it. That's the reality, because you've a great chance with it's essentially like you win four games and you're champions.
Yeah. What's the big difference that Gloucester will pose to your average top 14 side? What do they do that you wouldn't come up against week in, week out?
Well, they've two of the fastest players in the world game on the wings. So
that helps.
The player of the tournament, was it? It hasn't been officially announced, is it? In Zamit Rees, is it? And Johnny May, who's been consistently brilliant for a lot. Yes, so there. We want to try and keep the ball away from them as much as possible, obviously.
See, this is why you're a coach. That's a great idea.
They have a lot of good players, and there's no relegation in the Premiership this season. So this is it. This is their game, but this is why we play it. Because if you want to win it, you got to beat the best team. So this is the first obstacle, and we're excited by it. We're looking forward to it, and we're going to. We prepared extremely well for Bordeaux. Preparation so far hasn't probably been as good as Bordeaux, but that was excellent. So sometimes you prepare brilliantly and you play poorly. Other times you prepare poorly and play brilliantly. So you know, it's Gloucester in their patch with no crowd, so it's probably a neutral game. And there's a lot of upside for us going into this game.
I was reading very interesting quotes from your chat with Mario Rosenstock on his new podcast, and you were talking about the need for a great squad. You were saying 1 to 15 doesn't do enough. And then you said something which surprised me, given the season you're having, because it looks like a good season. You said, the culture isn't very good. I haven't got a good environment going in my club at the moment, and it needs to get better. I'm struggling to convince people this isn't a job, this is a privilege, this is your passion. I thought that was absolutely fascinating. So you don't feel the environment is good at the moment?
Sorry. It's good, but it needs to get better. That's what I meant by that. I wouldn't say it's a negative. I would say it's where we started from and what John O'Gibbs did. He's done a good, very good job. Very good job with the environment we're trying to get. But we've a long way to go, Joe. It's like with no knockout games last year, that mental capacity to grow or to get better is such a huge void in coaches and players' heads that it feels like this is the first season when, you know what I mean? Because you haven't played competitive games. So you know what I mean? I think when you're, I suppose, lucky enough to have what I had in Munster, what I had with Ireland, with the Lions, the good environments, they stick out straight away. It wasn't, in Racing, the environment at the start wasn't good, but by the end it was good. I think in La Rochelle, when I came in, I was probably a little bit taken aback how the need for people to probably get closer, get tighter, right, and get more invested in each other. And, you know, we're not, we haven't hit halfway point in terms of 50% of that yet.
Mm. And what's the way for you to help that along or expedite that? Or can you, as a coach, help that along, get people invested in each other?
I think what's absolutely crucial is that people are themselves, and you create an environment that helps them to grow, to flower, to empower other people, to share their knowledge, to share their story, to understand what they stand for, what they value, what they prioritize, what's important to them. I think you really gotta know your teammate, rate your teammate, respect your teammate, and you know what I mean, when you're going into a game after 76 minutes and the score is 12 on, and you're able to kind of connect with a guy that means something that you're playing for him as opposed to being a teammate, then I think you've a great chance of pushing each other over the line.
There's probably people listening saying, ask him about Leinster against Munster at the weekend. In fairness, you didn't get a chance to see it because you've got your own stuff going on over there. But you can be our French expert in a way, because Leinster have Toulon on Friday and then Munster have Toulouse on Saturday at Thomond. We have both of those games live commentary here and Off the Ball, by the way, I should point out to people. So Toulon, they're seventh in the table. They've played 20. They've won 11. They're at Leinster. And then Toulouse, obviously, I think we're a bit more familiar with. So how do you see those two games?
I think two very different games, in the fact that Leinster are, is it the Aviva or is it the
RDS? RDS, yeah.
So Leinster and the RDS, with the team they have, with the standards they have, will be very, you know, I mean, it's the one game people don't want to play is Leinster.
Yeah.
They're a great side and they have been for a long time. So you cannot say much more about them. They've consistently proven when they're challenged or put up, teams put it up to them, they find a solution to win games, with the exception probably a few years ago of Saracens. But they're a great side. I think they will be probably too smart for Toulon, in terms of probably too disciplined,
okay,
and together for a period of time where they have massive trust. So that's how I'd see that one. I think the game in Thomond Park is very different, especially in the fact that Toulouse lost at home to Montpellier. So good teams rarely lose two games in a row. Toulouse are a good side. You could say the same about Munster. Yes, but I think the kind of the fear factor about going to Thomond Park and about Munster isn't what it was a number of years ago, and it's a difficult game to call.
Yeah, most people are on the fence about that one, but given Toulouse a huge chance, could easily go either way. And it's hard to know where Munster are after, you know, very demoralising Saturday at the RDS.
Yeah, a hugely demoralising, Saturday, no doubt about it. So confidence will probably be dented, and they'll be looking for a response.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for all that, very interesting. Always great chatting to you about how things are going over there. Very best of luck on Friday, hope it goes well.
Yeah, good man, Joe, appreciate your support.
Take care.
Thank you.
Good man. Ronan O'Gara there, head coach of La Rochelle, amongst other things. Our rugby coverage here on Off the Ball is in association with Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. By the way, that La Rochelle Gloucester game, if you're looking for, kicks off at 8 o'clock. I think the Leinster one is off at 5, kind of unusual early kickoff, but it's Good Friday, I suppose. So that's your Friday viewing sorted if you're looking for a bit of rugby. And then, as I said, we have the Leinster match live, and then we'll have Munster Toulouse live as well. 3 o'clock kickoff. It'll be Neil Tracy and Keith Wood calling the action in that game. Take a short break. Back in a sec.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network.